All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world, and happy Monday, everybody. Today is July 6, 2026. I hope you all had a wonderful 4th of July weekend, and we are off and running with the new week. Our top story this morning, strategy, is back in the news. Michael Saylor is at it again. Strategy has just filed an 8K with the SEC that gave us some interesting information. From June 28th or so to July 5th, Strategy sold 3,588 Bitcoin with an average sale price just over $59,000. So, first of all, an average sale price of $59,000 when Strategy's average purchase price is somewhere around $75,000. So Michael Saylor is losing money on Bitcoin. That's kind of big. That's an important one. Also, remember, it was just a couple of weeks ago, Bitcoin took a big dive when Strategy announced that they had sold 32 Bitcoin. Now they're selling more than 100 times that. So maybe it was the initial shock that Saylor had sold any Bitcoin at all is why it sold off so hard back in May on that 32 Bitcoin news. You'd think 3,500 Bitcoin would sell off a little harder than 32 Bitcoin. But yeah, now that Saylor is selling at all, I guess that initial shock has worn off. Keep in mind, this is the same guy who said, never ever sell your Bitcoin. Sell your kidneys first. Sell your children into slavery before you sell your Bitcoin. Or whatever it is that guy would say. He's said some pretty wacky stuff about Bitcoin over the last few years. He's dumping again. So why is he dumping? Because he has to. He's got to pay dividends on his Stretch, his preferred equity stock that he sold, which was just Saylor's newest iteration of the infinite money glitch. He's had several versions of it where he issues either shares or debt and uses the money to buy Bitcoin. Bitcoin price goes up. Strategy price goes up. He issues more shares, issues more debt. That stopped working in about the middle of last year, and he started doing this Stretch thing, the Strategy preferred stock, where they promised people this 11.5% dividend, and they went on this big marketing campaign where they had AI girls in bikinis by the pool talking about how they retired, even though they still look like they're 24 years old somehow, because they're making their 11% dividends in Stretch. And by the way, Stretch is down like 12% since they started doing that. That's interesting. Saylor's infinite money glitch has turned into a doom loop. We've been talking about this for a while. I don't know if Strategy is going to blow up or not this cycle. I know one day Strategy definitely will blow up because Saylor can't help himself, his personality type. He's constantly pushing and maximizing leverage. And sooner or later, you're going to blow up when you do that, kind of like he blew up during the dot-com bubble the last time. Will he survive this time? I don't know. He probably will. He's got enough assets he could sell. He's got to maintain his $2.5 billion in cash reserves according to their new Bitcoin monetization plan. So every time they pay dividends in Stretch, which is twice a month now, he's going to have to sell a little bit of Bitcoin in order to raise the cash to pay those dividends. And that's never going to change unless he stops paying those dividends, which I think is probably inevitable. He'll do that someday. But they have enough cash and enough Bitcoin that they could access to be able to get them through this Bitcoin winter. The question is, how painful is it going to be along the way? We've got a couple of months of severe Bitcoin winter ahead of us, and Saylor's going to have to sell a lot more. Now, there was also some other interesting things in that Strategy 8K. They also reported $8.3 billion in unrealized losses on Bitcoin. Again, their average purchase price was about $75,000. We are well below that level in Bitcoin now. Also interesting, their chief accounting officer has retired. They buried that in the 8K. The chief accounting officer has retired, and the chief financial officer will take over that role. That's interesting because the accounting officer is more responsible for compliance and, you know, generally accepted accounting principles. Remember those? And the chief financial officer is, right, your chief stock pumper. He's responsible for the growth strategy. He's responsible for the capital structure. The chief accounting officer is kind of in charge of keeping the CFO honest. Well, now that the CFO is doing both roles, you kind of have the fox guarding the hen house over a Strategy. Yeah, what's the worst thing that could happen over there? Anyways, Bitcoin is down on that news, and it continues to fall as we speak. We'll see what happens as the rest of the world wakes up to that news. We've got news from NVIDIA this morning, or at least news from an analyst covering NVIDIA. It seems NVIDIA's next generation server rack has been delayed by more than a year. The Kyber NVL144 is having printed circuit board issues. That has delayed them by quite a bit. Now, there was some Asian PCB manufacturers were selling off pretty hard overnight on that story. NVIDIA stock not really affected. Maybe that story just hasn't set in yet. You'd think that would affect NVIDIA. But for now, it's not. We've also got SK Hynix has begun the marketing campaign for their $28 billion U.S. ADR listing. They're getting in on the stock issuance bandwagon here. A lot of companies have been issuing shares like crazy over the last couple of months, raising capital all to burn it and on artificial intelligence. SK Hynix is issuing $28 billion worth of U.S. listed ADRs. It's American Depository Receipts. It's basically a stock you can buy, or an IOU you can buy here in America, that grants you entitlement to a share of a foreign company listed in another country. In this case, SK Hynix, which is listed in South Korea. That will begin trading on July 10th. Hey, that's Friday. It's another $28 billion in liquidity that the market's just going to have to gobble up. Also, we've got TeraWulf is the Bitcoin miner turned data center operator. Another one of these little pop-up data center shitcos. Their stock is ripping this morning, up 16% as of the last time I looked, on news that Anthropic has signed a 20-year late lease for a data center that hasn't even been built yet in Kentucky. That should generate about $19 billion in revenue over those 20 years. TeraWulf was a Bitcoin miner up until last year when they decided they're not going to mine Bitcoin anymore. They're going to start being a data center operator. Most of their assets is still in Bitcoin. They posted a 400 some odd million dollar loss in their last quarter because the Bitcoin business kind of sucks and their data centers aren't operational yet, burning a lot of capital. And by the way, why are we signing 20-year leases for data centers that are full of GPUs that are going to last for 5, maybe 6 years? I don't know. That's a question for the accountants to sort out, even though the accountants are quitting and the CFOs are taking over their jobs elsewhere. But yeah, you know what? I'm sure it's all very above board. It's only the biggest accounting fraud in human history, the AI bubble. What's the worst thing that could happen there? Also, any of you guys out there who have watched Fox News or Fox Business for the last 20 years have probably seen something like this during their commercial break. You guys remember that? Remember those William Devane commercials for Roslyn Capital? Yeah, where they talk about, yeah, call the toll-free number now. You'll get your free investor guide. And if you buy gold, we'll even give you a free safe or something like that. Yeah, Roslyn Capital, they just filed for bankruptcy over the weekend. Oh, that's juicy. Why are gold companies filing for bankruptcy a year after, or a few months after, the price of gold like freaking tripled and silver quintupled over the same time frame? Well, we'll have to talk about that one. We've got Iran story in CNBC this morning. Iran may find it difficult to clear out all that oil inventory. One reason, China. Yeah, the Chinese. For some reason, they're not buying that Iranian oil, or at least not very much of it, even though more of it is flowing. What the hell happened in China at the oil market? Guys, the oil market continues to not make very much sense these days. We'll talk about that one, as well as another story out of China where a government official who was caught collecting $325 million worth of bribes has just been sentenced to death. You know, I'm very critical of China for many reasons, because F communism mostly, and because, you know, libertarian. China's not really in my cup of tea, if you will. That being said, capital punishment for government officials who get caught taking bribes, I'm not really seeing a downside here. Got to admit it. Also going on this morning, we've got Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd have announced that they will once again begin sailing through the Suez Canal and through the Red Sea, where they had stopped sailing several years ago because of Houthi and the Blowfish, who were blowing up boats over there in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. Looks like they will be starting up that route again. EasyJet, the UK budget airline, that stock is ripping this morning, higher by 10% after private equity firm Castlelake announced a deal to take the company private for $7.3 billion. Gee, you don't think they're going to do a dividend recapitalization and strip mine the company while paying themselves dividends, do you? I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Guys, a lot going on this morning. As always, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every business day. Right now, the S&P 500 is higher by 23 points or 0.31% in the green this morning. The Dow is negative by 64 points, 0.11% in the red for the Dow. Looking over at the NASDAQ, we are higher by 276 points, 0.9% in the green for the NASDAQ. So mixed bag for stocks this morning. The dollar is a little bit stronger here, higher by 20 basis points at 101.06. And speaking of the dollar and currencies, we got to check in on Japan and the Japanese yen. This is USD JPY. It is at 162.33. Again, guys, this is the number of yen it takes to make $1. This chart going higher means the yen is weakening. This chart going lower means the yen strengthening. And the reason I point this out is because we've had no news from the Japanese government over the last few days, even though we had that big red candle on Friday. Or I'm sorry, that was Thursday we had the big red candle. Nobody really knew what that was. Was the finance ministry intervening, or were they just doing rate checks where they call up the Forex traders and they ask them for a quote in order to kind of spook the market and get them to try to front run it? Well, whatever they did on Thursday, it's already almost gone. It's been 2 days since then, and the yen is already almost back to where it was. And again, there hasn't been any news. So whatever intervention, whatever fingers on the scale the Japanese government has going on over there, it is having less and less of an effect as time goes on. Looking over at the bond market, we've got the 30-year yield is at 4.986. That is higher by just a half a point. The 10-year yield is also lower by a half a point, 4.474% for the 10-year. The 2-year yield is at 4.125, also down a half a percent. And the 1 month is at 3.670. The bond market is awfully quiet this morning, me and my big mouth. Looking over at commodities, we've got spot gold is lower by 32 bucks this morning, 0.8% in the red at $4,143 for spot gold. Spot silver is at $61.70. That is lower by 70 cents or about 1% in the red, but I still like the shiny. Copper is higher by half a percent. Platinum is higher by a third of a percent. Palladium is higher by a quarter of a percent. And even crude oil is catching a little bit of a bid here, higher by a quarter of a percent, $68.84. That's up by just a little bit this morning. But the big story is Bitcoin this morning. We are looking at 1 minute candles on the Bitcoin chart here. $61,337 is priced on Coinbase. That's down by $2,250 this morning. And you can see the lion's share of that happening within a couple of minutes. And that was that 8K that was filed from Strategy. It's continuing to sell off here as people wake up and read this news. So not good for Bitcoin. Let's set this back to daily candles so you can see what's going on here. I said, let's set this back to daily candles. Thank you, TradingView. Zooming in, you can see the chart. Bitcoin had had a couple of good days last week. It had bounced off the cycle lows of about 57,000, and it rallied as high as 64,000 last week. And then Michael Saylor came in, sold a bunch of Bitcoin, filed that 8K, and the chart has rolled over. So it looks like Bitcoin is heading to new lows for the cycles this week. Let's talk about what happened. Bitcoin Magazine has this one. Michael Saylor announces Strategy sold 3,588 Bitcoin for $216 million to fund dividends for their digital credit securities. And then here is the 8K form. There was actually a pretty good write-up in Stock Titan about this story here. Strategy flags $8.32 billion Bitcoin loss and tax hit. Strategy reported significant Bitcoin-related activity and leadership changes between June 29th and July 5th. The company neither sold shares under its at-the-market stock program nor repurchased any shares under its buyback program. From June 29th to June 30th, it sold 1,363 Bitcoin for $80.8 million at an average price of $59,256. And during the July 1st to 5th time, it sold 2,225 Bitcoin for $135.2 million at an average price of $60,773. As of July 5th, Strategy held 843,775 Bitcoin with an aggregate purchase price of $63.69 billion and an average purchase price of $75,476 while maintaining a $2.55 billion USD reserve. All right, so that $2.5 billion USD reserve, the company has told us through filings recently that they're going to maintain a cash pile of $2.5 billion, basically so they can always cover a year of dividends and debt service costs for the company. Now, they've also recently transitioned to bi-monthly dividends, or is it semi-monthly? They're going to pay dividends twice a month, which means twice a month, they're going to have to sell Bitcoin to raise the cash to stay at that $2.5 billion number as they're paying out these dividends on the regular. So get used to these announcements. They're going to be selling Bitcoin forever because that stretch dividend is perpetual. It's going to go on forever or until the company decides this was a terrible idea to begin with and reneges on the promise and announces that they're not going to pay any dividends in stretch anymore, and then the lawsuits can really get going. But for Q2 2026, the company expects an $8.32 billion loss on digital assets, almost entirely unrealized. I mean, they haven't sold most of their Bitcoin. And a digital asset carrying value of $49.67 billion. They also talk a lot about some tax things going on here that, I'll be honest with you, couldn't quite get my head around. Because the cost basis of its Bitcoin exceeded fair value as of June 30th, Strategy will record a valuation allowance fully offsetting its deferred tax benefit and deferred tax assets tied to this unrealized loss. I'll be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure what all this means, but this is what we have accountants for, right? We'll just let Strategy's accountants worry about that. Oh, the board also designated CFO Andrew Kang as the principal accounting officer following the retirement of chief accounting officer Janine Montgomery. Well, maybe Janine Montgomery is just retiring. Maybe she's had a long, fruitful career and she's going to spend time with family, pursue her interests, go backpacking through Europe, whatever. Or maybe she's just GTFOing because the books at this company have got to be an absolute mess with everything Saylor has been up to. I cannot imagine the living hell that is chief accounting officer at Strategy. And now that she's leaving, the CFO is going to take over and the fox is going to be guarding the hen house. Strategy shares are down 4.7% on this news, trading at $96 or $95.99, off by $4.60. And Bitcoin, again, just continuing to sell off here, $61,387 for Bitcoin. Also going on this morning, NVIDIA's AI server delay report sends Asian tech stocks sliding. And curious enough, it did not send NVIDIA stocks sliding at all. Asian technology stocks slumped after a report that NVIDIA's next-generation AI server rack system has been delayed by more than a year due to manufacturing difficulties. Research firm SemiAnalysis said in an X post that NVIDIA's Kyber NVL 144 hit setbacks in the construction of printed circuit boards for the platform. NVIDIA did not respond to a request for comment outside of regular office hours. The report landed as AI stock investors are growing increasingly jittery with even the smallest setback, sparking outsized reactions after the years-long rally. Last week, global tech stocks whipsawed on headlines, hinting a potential overcapacity in the AI buildup and growing competition. The biggest of those headlines was a story about Meta becoming a neocloud. By the way, Meta, when are you cutting your CapEx? If you're already admitting you built out too many data centers, maybe you should stop building more. Hey, it's just an idea. I just throw them out there. Japan's Ibiden, a printed circuit board maker that counts NVIDIA as its largest client, dropped as much as 10%. Among related suppliers, Kingboard Laminates tumbled 18% in Hong Kong, Elite Material fell 10% in Taiwan, and Samsung Electromechanics slid 11% in South Korea. A delay to Kyber does not necessarily imply weaker AI CapEx, but it more likely suggests that NVIDIA's most ambitious next-gen system architecture may take longer to deploy, which is not entirely surprising, said Gary Tan, a portfolio manager at Allspring Global Investments. So NVIDIA not really reacting to this news. The stock is literally going nowhere this morning, $194.84. It's actually higher by a couple of pennies, now down by a couple of pennies, unchanged on the day. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. Meanwhile, TeraWulf shares soar after Anthropic leases data center in Kentucky. Anthropic, with all that money it doesn't make, is going to pay a whole bunch of money to TeraWulf to lease a data center for 20 years, even though that data center is only going to last for five. Anthropic on Monday signed a 20-year lease to use TeraWulf data center in Kentucky. The data center, located about an hour southwest of Louisville and Hawesville, will have capacity of around 400 megawatts, with first power delivery expected in the second half of 2027. TeraWulf shares soared more than 16% in pre-market trading. The lease is expected to generate around $19 billion in revenue over the initial term. The Anthropic lease validates our strategy and establishes a long-duration revenue stream with one of the world's leading AI companies, said CEO Paul Prager. TeraWulf also sold its 50% interest in a 168-megawatt data center in Abernathy, Texas, to an investor group led by FluidStack. TeraWulf is a crypto mining company that has pivoted to AI data center infrastructure. Its stock is up more than 80% this year. By the way, this comment here that the Anthropic lease validates our strategy, establishes a long-term revenue stream, probably not. I haven't seen the terms of the lease, but I'm guessing it is very wishy-washy language that leaves Anthropic with all kinds of outs should they decide they, I don't know, hypothetically don't have the money to pay for it. But that won't stop TeraWulf from taking that lease document and going to private credit firms, private equity firms, asset managers, whoever, people who manage your retirement, and saying, look at this lease. Loan us the money we need to build this data center so that Anthropic, who doesn't make money, can rent it from us. That's probably what they're going to do here. And again, TeraWulf was a Bitcoin miner who in their last quarter announced that they lost $460 million, up from a $60 million loss a year prior, because Bitcoin's price is crashing mostly, and yet the stock is up 320% over the last year, a further 16.5% this morning, $24.70 for TeraWulf, higher by another $3.50 on this news. And the market is going to have to come up with some more liquidity because they've got more shares to absorb. At the end of this week, memory chipmaker SK Hynix kicks off $28 billion U.S. listing. SK Hynix kicked off the formal marketing process for its U.S. listing on Monday as the South Korean chipmaker looks to capitalize on surging investor demand for the high-flying memory chip sector. The company is seeking to sell American depository receipts representing about 17.79 million common shares. That's according to the filing with the U.S. SEC on Monday, which would be valued at about $28 billion based on Friday's closing price in Seoul. The offering of ADRs, or American Depository Receipts, comes after the firm's sole traded stock rallied about 260% this year, propelling the company's market cap above $1 trillion. The South Korean firm expects the ADRs to begin trading on July 10th, that's Friday, according to an earlier regulatory filing. At the proposed size, SK Hynix ADR sale would be among the top three first-time share sales ever, depending on the exchange rate. It would rival Saudi Aramco's $29.4 billion debut, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Of course, that's on top of SpaceX's massive IPO. Google's issuing a bunch of shares. Anthropic, OpenAI are probably going to IPO at some point. Everybody's issuing shares. Why are all the insiders selling? Huh, that's interesting. Maybe that's a question for the cheerleaders in the financial press. And then we've got this one. Global gold and silver dealer liquidates in Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Roslyn Capital, they are kaput. The international gold and silver dealer closed its business, owing customers millions. Yikes. I can't help but notice that owing customers millions part. Guys, be careful in the gold and silver space. I like the shiny. I love the shiny. I'm a big proponent of precious metals. But there are a lot of shady operators in this category, in this sector. Precious metals investors saw their holdings skyrocket in value in 2024 and 2025, which was great news for them, but bad news for some dealers, such as Roslyn Capital LLC. Roslyn Capital filed for Chapter 11 liquidation, facing distress from declining profitability, compounded by an unsustainable order fulfillment model amid record precious metal prices. The distress was exacerbated by an increase in gold prices that rose from a low of $1,500 per ounce in 2023 to $4,300 per ounce by the end of 2025 and a peak of $5,625 in January of 2026, according to Bondoro. Silver peaked at about $121 per ounce. The global precious metal asset management firm filed Chapter 11 with plans to wind down its business and liquidate its assets. The Los Angeles-based gold and silver dealer filed its petition in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Central District of California, listing up to $1 million to $10 million in assets and $50 million to $100 million in liabilities on July 2nd, including about $23.6 million in unsecured debt, according to documents. Roslyn's revenue declined from about $151 million in 2021 to $97.8 million in 2025. Now, most of the creditors' names were redacted from the petition. Roslyn Capital's only creditor listed on the petition was Fox News Network LLC, owed over $1.9 million. The names of the other 19 unsecured creditors in the petition were owed over $21.6 million. Those were redacted. It's a good bet some of their customers lost money here. Look, these guys had an unsustainable order fulfillment process. I don't really know what that means, but I suspect they were very slow to fill their orders, which meant they were losing money as the price was going up. I'm only guessing that's what happened here. All I can tell you guys is all 75 of the employees at this company are losing their jobs here. I'm actually kind of surprised this company only had 75 employees, considering the fact how aggressively they were marketed on TV. And guys, just be careful. Do your homework. Do not rush in, oh, they're printing money, or I read a thing, or my nephew made a whole bunch of money in gold. I should buy gold. You call the toll-free number and you turn over your life savings to them. The next thing you know, the company's bankrupt. Be careful. There's a lot of shady operators in the precious metal space. I've documented some of that on this channel. I talked about the Silver Trade account and the shady stuff that was going on over there and the lack of disclosures, marketing research masquerading as news. And, you know, if they have a toll-free number on news and they're promising to give you a free safe if you buy gold with them, chances are it's just not that good a deal, guys. Don't. Just be careful with your money. I hate to see this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, Iran may find it difficult to clear its oil inventories even after sanctions relief. This one in CNBC this morning. What the hell is going on in China? Iran is likely to face challenges in clearing its oil inventories even after restrictions on its exports are lifted, as its biggest customer tweaks its energy strategy while oil from other suppliers floods the market, according to analysts. China, the world's top crude importer, has not been particularly enthusiastic about purchasing Iranian oil, despite traditionally being the main buyer of the country's energy. In fact, the Chinese do not show any enthusiasm to buy much oil from anybody, said somebody I can't pronounce, the chairman emeritus at FGE Nexen ECA on CNBC. China's crude imports have dwindled since the Iran war started. In late February, depressing oil demand. In May, they have plunged 29% from a year earlier to just 7.82 million barrels per day, the lowest level since February of 2018, according to Wind Information. Chinese imports of crude from Iran have more than halved in June to about 654,000 barrels a day compared with the prior month. The Middle East conflict has sharpened China's strategic focus and injected renewed momentum into the green transition efforts, according to a report by Stockholm-based Institute for Security and Development Policy. Chinese Premier Li Qiang has reiterated the need to boost non-fossil energy expansion and to build a new energy system while encouraging innovation and quicker reforms, the research organization said. Meanwhile, oil supply is expected to increase after the oil cartel OPEC Plus agreed to add 188,000 barrels a day to their output target for August. All right, so right away, I got to call BS on this here. The Middle East conflict has sharpened China's strategic focus and injected renewed momentum into its green transition efforts. No effing way is Chinese oil imports down by half because they built more wind and solar in three freaking months. It just doesn't happen. The Chinese build fast. I get it. It's impressive how fast they can move things. And because it's a central planned economy with a communist government, they can basically direct everybody in the country to do a thing, and they have to do it or suffer the consequences, which may include death. That being said, green transitions don't happen in 3 months. Uh-uh. This is not wind and solar. You're not going to explain your way out of China cutting their oil imports in half with wind and solar. I don't know what is going on in China. They should be buying up this Iranian crude. They were buying it before the conflict, and then they started draining down their reserves and buying less of it. Now, the Iranian oil is starting to flow. It's not back to 100% of pre-war levels, but it's getting there. And the Chinese have not resumed buying. Are the Chinese still dumping their reserves? If they are still dumping their reserves, why would they do that? Why would they continue dumping reserves instead of buying the Iranian oil that they bought before the conflict? That doesn't make much sense. Or has something happened economically inside of China that all of a sudden over the last few months, the Chinese don't need as much oil? Maybe their demand has fallen off a cliff. To be honest with you, that is a far more plausible explanation than some guy said a thing about wind and solar and suddenly the country doesn't import oil anymore. I just don't know what's going on inside of China. Again, all this economic data is very controlled and manipulated. It's just really hard to know for sure. But the energy market continues to make very little sense to me, guys. And that's one reason why I'm just staying out of it. Meanwhile, China sentences official to death over $325 million in bribes. First of all, holy shit, $325 million. That is a lot of bribes. And second of all, I can't really see a problem here. Not going to lie. Just maybe, there would be a lot less white-collar crime if this kind of thing happened. A Chinese court handed a rare death sentence to a former official on corruption charges in a severe punishment underscoring the intensity of President Xi Jinping's anti-graft crackdown. Yang Yulin, a former vice director of an economic zone in the eastern city of Nanjing, was sentenced to death on Monday for taking more than 2.21 billion yuan, that's $325 million U.S., worth of bribes between 2013 and 2023. That's according to state broadcaster China Central Television. Yang was found guilty also of embezzlement, abuse of power, and money laundering. His crimes were exceptionally grave and caused massive losses warranting the capital sentence, CCTV reported, citing the Changzhou Intermediate People's Court in Jiangsu province. So look, maybe we don't go quite so far with the whole, capital punishment thing and sentenced to death for corruption. But at the same time, I've said it a lot on this channel, white collar crime creates a blue collar crime on an industrial scale. When somebody steals hundreds of millions of dollars is the lifetime total value of all the work of what the lives of thousands of men, hundreds of men at least, right? So when you steal that much money, you are destroying that many lives. These are not victimless crimes. And when that many lives get destroyed, you end up with things like domestic abuse, child abuse, neglected kids. You end up with liquor stores robbed. You end up with carjackings, people getting desperate to make ends meet because their life's work was stolen from them. And you get blue collar crime on a massive scale. And those blue collar crimes are often treated with capital punishment and severe prison sentences. And yet the white collar crimes that create them, that plant the seeds of that blue collar crime here in the States, at least they're given a slap on the wrist, barely an inconvenience, the price of doing business. So I don't know. I'm not often one to hold up a story about China and say, maybe the United States should do this, but maybe we should go at least a little bit in this direction. I just throw it out there. You guys do what you want with it. Meanwhile, we've got Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd to resume sailings through the Suez Canal for one of their services. They are slowly returning to the Red Sea. Danish shipping giant Maersk said on Monday that one of the services in its Gemini network with Germany's Hapag-Lloyd will resume sailing through the Suez Canal instead of going around Africa's Cape of Good Hope. Shipping companies are weighing a return to the critical Asia-Europe trade corridor after vessels were rerouted around Africa in recent years after attacks in the Red Sea, which Yemen's Houthis said were a show of solidarity with Palestinians. The joint decision with Hapag-Lloyd comes following thorough assessments of the security situation in the Red Sea area and marks a step towards a gradual return to the Trans-Suez Corridor. Something tells me we have not heard the last from Houthi and the Blowfish in the Red Sea there. Call me crazy, but with everything going on in the Strait of Hormuz, something tells me the Houthis are going to start acting up at some point here too. But for now, Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd are sailing through that route. And last one of the day, EasyJet shares soar 10% as budget airline agrees to $7.3 billion Castle Lake takeover. Now, this is kind of interesting because budget airlines are going bankrupt left and right around the world. Why would a private equity firm buy one of these? EasyJet shares took off in early deal-making Monday after the UK low-cost carrier agreed in principle to a £5.5 billion or $7.3 billion takeover bid from U.S. private equity manager Castlelake. The budget airline was up 10.5% shortly after, in London hitting a new 52-week high. Castlelake's improved plan to take EasyJet private, which was agreed to on Sunday, comes after the carrier last month rejected a lower £4.9 billion proposal from the private equity firm. Castlelake has made 5 bids for EasyJet in total. And that's pretty much the whole story. So what's going on here? Why are they taking it private? I suspect what they're going to end up doing is they're going to end up doing a dividend recapitalization, which is typically how private equity firms loot these companies. They'll buy EasyJet, and then EasyJet will borrow a whole bunch of money. And most of that money will go to pay dividends to Castlelake fund holders. And then the debt service costs from all that borrowed money will slowly bankrupt the company. That's typically what private equity does when they take over a company, is they strip mine it that way. I don't know that that's necessarily Castlelake's plan, but it wouldn't surprise me if a year or two from now we're doing this update and you hear EasyJet files for bankruptcy defaulting on massive loan that was taken out to pay for dividend recapitalization. And yeah, there'll be another I told you so from Jack when that happens. But for now, EasyJet's having a pretty good morning. Stock is up almost 10%, 9.5% higher, $611.62 higher by about $53. And that is all we got for you this morning, guys. It's going to be a noisy day for Bitcoin. I just want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with us, Melonheads. Don't forget the like button. You new guys, hit that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow. Thank you to all my private. Thank you to all my Patreon supporters and all my members on YouTube and Buy Me Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time. Live small and dream big.